Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From the home of time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
This is Charlton Live.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he stops robbing his home. Sweet song.
Good things come in threes. Three goals, 3 points, 3 wins in a row. We even got 3 pints in crossbars. More of that, please, lads. Good evening and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes. Thank you for joining me here on your Sunday evening. Joining me in the studio live is Mr. Mark Newbury. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, came armed with quesadillas this after your warning last week for throwing up with no food.
Yeah, you had a yellow card the other day. Yeah. So
quesadillas as well, that's a bit posh for us, but I like it.
can you just imagine the thousands of people listening, Googling as we speak.
Quesadilla. Yeah, I can't even spell it, so good luck to them. The other voice you heard there is the grand old man of Charlton Live, old man Smudger. How you doing, Tom?
Top notch.
Yeah, you all right? Enjoy yesterday?
Yes, I'm going to pick you up on that grammatical lunacy you just got away with. But
which bit?
Three pints. Yeah, that bit. But we've got food, we've got 3 points, possible takeover in the offing. What, 2 hours of talking about football? What's not like? Yeah.
If you're going to stop me to pick up on my grammatical errors throughout the show, this is going to take forever. So let's just crack on, shall we, on tonight's show. We are going to look back at yesterday's 3-1 win over the Saddlers of Warsaw. We're going to hear from Carl Robinson. We want to hear your opinions on the games as well. So you can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. You can head over to the Charlton Live forum. There's a thread on there to talk about yesterday's game. That also, of course, yesterday was the meeting between the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust and Director Richard Murray. So we're going to hear from Richard Wiseman, the chair of the Supporters Trust, who was at that meeting yesterday to find out what was said. Because obviously it's quite important. It all came about after Card had planned a protest for yesterday in order to demand answers, and Richard Murray sort of headed that off and decided to arrange this meeting between himself and the Supporters Trust to try and see what assurances he could give to them as, of course, we go through this painstaking takeover situation. Also, finally, this evening, our player in focus is Joe Aribo, who scored 3 goals in his last 4 games here at the Valley. Obviously kept out of the side by Jake Forster-Cassidy, earlier on in the season, but he's come in now to partner Ahmed Kashi whilst he's been out injured for Sikaski. So I wonder what you've made of Joe Rebo since he's come in over the last few weeks. So find the tweet about him on our timeline and respond to that for our player in focus this evening. Just before we get going, Tel, what a great game that was. That super. Second half in particular.
Second half especially, and I don't think it's a surprise that... you know, we've been saying about how we've missed Tariq Fosu, and I don't want to single him out necessarily because it was a great team performance in the second half, but he makes such a difference, and he made such a difference yesterday. Mm. Because up to that point, Walsall were strangling us a little bit. Steffi Mavididi aside, we were struggling to get in and around and looking like we were going to score too often. But then Tariq came on, and they just didn't know how to handle him. And with both in the side, you know, because at times they were like trebling up on Steffi, even Jay De Silva trying to overlap, there were two, three players on him. Same the other side with Marshall. As soon as Tariq came on, they didn't have enough bodies to cope.
Mm. Mark, did you enjoy that game yesterday?
Well, I thought after Thursday, me doing the cashy bet and much derision that it was going to be 4-0, I mean, we had enough chances. It could have been 5-6 yesterday. Yeah. So I felt slightly vindicated. It wasn't the correct score, but I felt slightly vindicated that we were going to. And we just, the attacking play yesterday, I thought was some of the best I've seen this season.
That's excellent. I'll take your vindication and donate that to the Upbeats because
how much is a vindication nowadays?
Yeah, well, the going rate is nothing, unfortunately, Mark. So we lost our cashy back bet again, but we came close again. Right, let's have a listen to the highlights from yesterday's win. This is Terry and Greg over on Valley Pass.
And, it's all you can hear Fenn saying play it forward, but play it forward just to lose the ball has no sense whatsoever. It might not be pretty, but...
Nelena now looks at that route one option towards McGuinness and has managed to fall to McGuinness in the pounds here. Just McGuinness shooting chance. There's a good save from Leah Roberts, who dived to his left. McGuinness cutting inside looking for that far corner. Tell you what though, when Charlton managed to find McGuinness, he's been getting the better of the Walsall defence.
100% and did it again.
Marshall seems to be occupying that left hand side at the moment. Little step over onto his left foot. Marshall, ball in the box is good. And Rebo, first time shot.
What a goal!
Lovely finish!
Oh, what a goal!
Joe Rebo gives Charlton the lead. Great ball in from Mark Marshall on the left hand side, chips it in, and Aribo with a calm left footed volley have found the bottom right corner, and Charlton have the lead.
Oh, what a lovely finish that is, and good football as well from Charlton. Walsall will be asking questions why I think it was Edwards cleared it away from the goal line when he was, if it had just let the ball go, it would have been a goal kick, but he cleared it away, fell to De Silva. De Silva picked up Marshall, took his man on, went past him, lovely ball into the box. Joe Rebo just watched it drop to his foot and calmly slotted it with his left foot past the despairing hand of Roberts. Lovely
Chambers
finish.
Chambers, Rebo still with it, into Mavididi. Nice turn, Mavididi goes for goal! Bar! Funded it against the bar. Solly wins possession. Oh, he almost got possession again from Charlton and also able to clear. Controls and now look to try and take on Solly. To his left is Leahy. Leahy, ball in the box, is a decent one. And not Zuma, the smallest man on the pitch. Heads level. For Walsall, how he got himself into a bit of space, I do not know. Ball into the box of Lee, really poor goal for Charlton to concede. And Zuma with his header deflects back off the post and into the net.
Yeah, well, we said it just now. Chris Solly then on this Charlton right hand side and been given a torrid time from Roberts, and he was teased there. And you can see Reeves trying to get it back and cover the overlap from Leahy, but he didn't get back quick enough. And Leahy got the ball into the box. And Ostermer just timed his run perfectly. Charlton, I think, were so conscious of Bakayoko's strength and power that they left Ostermer and that little run all on his own and just glanced his header beyond Ben Amos for the equaliser.
The smallest man on the pitch, and that's including Chris Solly. And there's the half-time whistle, and Charlton will be disappointed at half-time. Edwards, who seemingly was a couple of yards outside the pitch, and Lennon has taken a chance, and Edwards has got in on goal, plays it across to Bakayoko. Great talents from Consa. Edwards again off the post and cleared out. How's that stayed out?
Superb defending by Ezri Konsa in the first place. They should have scored.
Play on as that man, Reeves, picks up the ball. Lovely ball forward to McGuinness, who's through. Josh McGuinness, 1-on-1, straight at the goalkeeper, who parries it back out. Dobson heads down, and that should have been a goal for Charlton. And Walsall will look to try and counter-attack. Otsuma on the left side now. Tyler Roberts able to turn Kashi, and he's done really well to work a bit of space. And the reverse ball finds Bakayoko, closes in on goal. We'll go for goal, and then it's the side netting. It took a deflection off Harry Lennon, did superbly well to come across, and that could have been 2-1 Walsall.
It's not a bad delivery. McGuinness with a head off the post. It'll drop to. Oh, that might be a penalty. Oh, took out Konsa, isn't it? Fosu. I think that was Fosu who got there first. A pile of bodies in and around the penalty has to take this. Swings it in right footed. It's in there. It's a header.
Oh, it's saved.
Is it bundled home?
No. That stayed out.
That stayed. You had McGuinness. You had Mavadini. You had Lennon there as well.
Nobody could force it home,
but the initial save from Roberts keeps Walsall in this game. Tries to return the favour, Marshall, but Walsall have it back with Dobson out here to Ostermer, but he's for the first time lost out to De Silva. De Silva into the centre circle. Releases Mavadini. Mavadini takes on Roberts into the penalty area.
It's an own goal!
Oh, it's an own goal, Roberts!
Come on!
As Charlton take the lead, Mavadini causing all sorts of problems in the penalty area. Roberts pursued him back towards the edge of the six-yard box. And just as Mavadini was about to pull the strike, he touched it with his right foot and only steered it past his own keeper and into the back of the net.
Yeah, he's going to try and claim this to Charlton striker, but I tell you what, it's definitely an own goal. We have the perfect angle here. Lovely release from De Silva, who lost out. As you said, Ozuma's been excellent for Walsall. He lost out on that occasion. De Silva brought the ball forward. Lovely ball to find Mavadidi. It's a good first touch though from Mavadidi to beat Corey Roberts. Gets past him and Roberts just gets a touch on the ball, and the goalkeeper wasn't expecting it, and it goes into the goal.
He's trying to find Fosu. That's good work from Tariq Fosu. Lovely little turn. He's past Roberts into the penalty area. Ball back across. Marshall on the edge of the area.
Oh, he's gone
over the bar.
He's got to do better there, Mark Marshall. Superb work from Fosu.
Ball forward. McGuinness underneath this, but Roberts gets a touch, but it'll drop to Fosu. Lovely flick to Mavadidi. Into the penalty area, Mavadidi. Cuts back inside, takes a shot. Not entirely sure, but it's crept past Roberts and into the goal for Charlton Sturt. Steffi Mavadidi, as people have rightly said, deserved that goal. And Charlton, you feel now, must have the victory. Steffi Mavadidi, superb solo effort. Lovely work to from Fosu with the flick to find him. But the rest of the work was all down to him. And he squeezed it past Roberts for Charlton Sturt.
I think that is his goal as well. It's a lovely flick from Fosu. And Mavadini definitely is onside as well. And it is his goal. He just manages to cut it onto his right foot and poke the ball past the near post of Liam Roberts. And that seals the 3 points, you'd think, for Charlton.
So it went in slow motion as it left his foot.
Lovely stuff there, the highlights of yesterday's win over Walsall. Thanks to Terry and Greg on Valley Pass. The recording for the third goal cut out slightly, so you might have noticed a slight issue there. But, I mean, great to hear it again.
We were only screaming, it's fine.
The thing that you did point out, Tao, actually, while we're listening back, is we had a couple of scares at the start of that second half.
Absolutely,
in particular, that chance where Lennon sort of gifted them possession.
It's the first mistake he's made since coming back, I think. And first proper mistake, I mean, you know, regardless of maybe a few scuff clearances. But... I think he just got wrapped up in the let's play the football out of, and we did that quite a bit, playing the football out of defence side to side, which the crowd were getting frustrated with at times, but Lennon just misread how close the I think was it Tyler Roberts?
It was Roberts, close
to him.
Just or was it Edwards? It might have been Edwards.
I could have been, I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember, but misread how close the player was, and he was able to nip in, and if it hadn't been for Ezri Konsa, how he got back and slid in to stop that ball going. I mean, they still should have scored, mind.
Mm.
But it might have been a completely different game. They had two chances, real good chances, before we went 2-1 up.
Mm.
So, yeah.
It's interesting, you mentioned there the frustrations from the fans, because we saw during the pattern of play in the first half was very much every time we had the ball, Walsall had 10 men on the edge of their box. They were really sitting back, making it difficult. And there was times yesterday in that first half that you felt the crowd getting a bit frustrated when we were trying to pass the ball around. There were a couple of times we went back to Amos. Now, I was surprised about that because, you know, surely when a team comes to set up like that, you know you have to pass the ball around and try and tire them out. And sometimes you do have to be a bit patient.
I think that's it. It's patience is the key. And
yeah, Russell Slade was a master.
as fans, you know, you say you want to be attacking, and it's really hard for, I think it's really hard for any fan to say, right, okay, then I see what you're doing there. You know, and you're waiting for them to come forward and make a gap, or one of our midfielders to make himself open. And if they weren't doing that, then it was easier just to go side to side to side. And, you know, I don't advocate the booing of it, but I'm thinking it is quite hard to, I don't know, the patience, like I say, is difficult.
But so sometimes, especially when you're Charlton at home in this league, you're expecting your team to be, you know, gung-ho. Outplaying teams, but like I say, other teams do come here with game plans, and they will make it difficult for you, and that's why it has been frustrating at times.
Yeah, I mean, Wimbledon did exactly the same thing. Mm. Wimbledon sort of like stopped us. I mean, it took us to the 60th minute against Wimbledon to score because
it was
they
even later than that, wasn't it?
60 something, and you know, I think it face say we have had exciting players, and you're thinking if you get the ball to Steffi or Marshall, that you want to see them get the ball, take people on, and it's just not always possible. So it comes back, and they weren't giving the ball away. If you look at our possession, we had, you know, the lion's share of possession. So
it's, you know, I think it's perhaps a signal of where we are as a club, and the fan base is going to be frustrated that things generally aren't moving fast enough. We, you know, you look at the side we've got, and perhaps we should almost certainly should be better than where we are. But then, considering the injury list and where, you know, who we've lost, that needs to be taken into account. And you know, there was people behind me, that the one phrase where my soul hits my boots is get it forward. You know, and there was a few times Lennon listened to the crowd and just punted it aimlessly up there, and we conceded possession straight away. It's no good to nobody. But I think it's key. If you look back at when we were doing really well at the beginning of the season, where we had Fosu and Holmes, both players who can run at defences, open them up, so they don't know which way they're going to go, step overs, all that sort of stuff. And that's when we were doing well. So opposition don't have enough players to man mark, you know, as I said earlier on, sometimes two, three players on them. They haven't got enough players to do that when there's more than one of them. Mm. And that gap we've had is because we only had Ricky Holmes. Well, now we've got Steffi Mavididi coming in to the side, and now Tariq Fosu coming back. And as I said earlier on, the difference in our play when Fosu came on was
nice. And Aribo is not afraid to drive forward with the ball as well. Yeah. It's interesting, really, if you think about those passing moves in the first half. It's almost the perfect metaphor for the takeover, really. It's taking ages, but you know something good's going to come a bit at the end.
I like that. Well done.
the big team news beforehand was the return of Chris Solly. I mean, how influential can he be for us? You know, out since December the 16th. We've had a few people, I'd say, this year saying, "Oh, Solly's not quite up to what he used to be." Are you of that view, Mark?
I am, actually. You know, how much of that is down to his personal fitness and the injuries, I don't know. I don't think he's been as solid as previous years. But I think when you set yourself such high standards as Chris Solly has done over the years, I mean, he's still terrific, but it's not as terrific as he was, kind of thing. And it's something we've been spoiled, because you used to know if he had a one-on-one with a tricky winger, he would win. And now you worry slightly, because you're thinking, you know, a lot of goals have come down from that side. It's not just him. He's not the only player on the pitch. But, you know, I'm not a case of get him out. I'm thinking if you look at the back four, they had, what, 20, 20, 19, and what, Chris Solly's 25?
27. His birthday yesterday.
Okay, yeah. 27. So, you know, it gives you that touch of more experience to have in the back. And I'm not sure how old Amos is either. I mean, but he's mid-20s as well. So when you've got such a youthful back four, I think you need to have an older head in there somewhere.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think I split my own opinion on this a little bit, because I agree to a certain extent. I think clearly Chris is not at the peak he was, no question about it. But I maintain that much of the attacking prowess from Walsall that came down that side came because as soon as Mark Marshall switched to the opposite side and Ben Reeves came across, Marshall was helping out Chris Solly a lot in that first sort of 20 minutes. As soon as he swapped sides, we were left hopelessly exposed, because their left back was Leahy, started overlapping constantly. And so Chris Solly's then got two players, because Reeves' backtracking was almost non-existent. And that's how the goal came, because Leahy did the overlapping. You got Chris Solly trying to mark Roberts, who was one of their best players. And he had a tough afternoon, Chris Solly, I thought, because of that. Second half, as soon as Mark Marshall switched sides again, when Tariq Fosu came on, Leahy almost non-existent. And he got clattered later on in the second half, and so he was even less influential. But almost nothing then started to come down that side. So what happens, though, with that, is that it stunts what Mark Marshall can do in the opposite direction. And that's a problem going forward, I think.
Yeah, Solly also took a booking sort of early on there. It was a horrible pass towards him. I think it was from Lennon. And Solly did everything he could to keep it in on his chest. But the Walsall man could see that if he kept that in, the only way he's going to do it is by leaving the ball for me. And he took it out, and Solly just wiped him out. And so gutted, because it only occurred to me 10 minutes later, I was like, oh, I could have made a birthday card joke for his yellow card there. But I didn't. But in terms of chances in that opening half hour, 25 minutes maybe, it was, I think we saw a long shot over the bar from from Reeves, and like I say, fans getting frustrated as we try to build up. A couple of times the ball went into the box, and McGuinness actually brought it down quite well. Had an effort from a tightish angle that the keeper touched wide that he might have squared. It was a decent effort, though.
I think Josh McGuinness had one of his better games, except for the two bits where he really needed to, and that was in front of goal, which sadly, the one was a good save from the keeper, and I actually thought Josh should have pulled it back to the edge of the box. But the second one, when he was through one-on-one in the second half, whether that's lack of confidence, I don't know, but he should score those.
He's still doing his grafting.
But exactly,
well. He's still
the rest of the game now.
At the back, and that's why. I mean, someone was tweeting me during the game yesterday, and I understand when a goal scorer is not scoring goals, and it's frustrating. I'm as frustrated as anyone. I understand that, you know, overall we might need a rest in terms of in front of goal, but he still brings stuff to the team, and you can't question his work rate as well. So I'm not one who's going to really kick him while he's down at the moment, but he probably does need a rest. I'm not going to say he doesn't, but
I think as a foil for the other flair players we've got, it's perfect, because he won pretty much everything yesterday in the air. He was giving the two centre halves a torrid time for the most part, and the only bit that's missing is that goal, and he got a bit unlucky hitting the post as well. So, you know, I think goals will come if they're given to him on a plate. I think that will happen. His confidence now is such, I think, in front of the goal, that it has to be on a plate, the first couple, I think, just to get him running again. But if it allows the likes of Mevedidi, Fosu, Aribo, Jada Silva to a lesser extent going forward, if it allows these sort of players the freedom to be able to get into the box, and Josh occupies the other two centre-halves, then why not? And if it works, if it continues to work like it did yesterday, does it matter?
Exactly. Right, the opening goal did come on the, well, just beyond the half hour cross. I think it came from Marshall, and it actually caught me unawares. I sort of only just looked up as it went in, so I was lucky they had replays on the big screen. But a really calm finish from Joe Aribo. That's 3 goals in 4 games now at the Valley. And showing, I mean, in terms of we're enjoying seeing Forster Kaski when he's been playing, arriving into the area. I mean, Aribo's now really brought that onto his game. It's something that end of last season, start of this season, Carl Robinson has been saying Aribo needs to score more goals, and now he is.
Yeah, I think possibly a lot of it's probably down to Boya and coaching, because you've got a midfielder in Boya who used to do that, and I think he can see, you know, something in Joe, and what they've done on the training ground, he must have said to him, right, you've got to time your runs, you've got to get into those positions, and you can finish. No, it's Marshall did the right thing. He's knocked it, and he's hit virtually a first-time cross. He's not tried to beat the guy again and again. You know, okay, it's gone past Josh, but Joe's in the perfect position. Lovely side foot volley. You know, I'm surprised with their defence left let him do that, because he was no one near him. So
but that
it
is
was
what
a good
can
goal.
Happen when you're a midfielder ghosting in. That's why they want you to do it, because sometimes you don't get picked up, I guess. And
I think the smart thing was, and the really thing that impressed me more than else, he didn't just try and hit it. He didn't just try and, you know, really just smack the ball into the back of net. He calmly placed it beyond the keeper, and that shows a maturity beyond his years, I think.
Yeah. Do you think Carl will have a decision when Forster Kaski's back?
A big one, yeah. Yeah, I think, as I mentioned before, maybe the one area that, I mean, Joe seems to have got the going forward bit, no problem at all, and on the, you know, his close control and the use of his feet is brilliant. But probably the one area that he still has to work on a little bit more is the defensive part of things, because probably it was either him or Kashi didn't pick up the run of Oshtuma for that first goal into the box, and nobody should be allowed to run. Whether that was his job or Kashi's, I don't know, but you know, something from midfield's got to track back and stop that from happening.
Yeah,
because he came from deep. So that's nitpicking a little bit, to be honest, because I think he's a fantastic player, a superb player.
Yeah, so much potential, so young as well. Only a couple of minutes later, we nearly had a second goal. Steffi Mavadidi, I think Arsenal owe us a new crossbar, because one of their employees has snapped the current one in half. A superb effort on the edge of the box. And it's such an explosive talent, Steffi. And, you know, we only got him for 5 games last season before his injury, and we saw flashes of it. But now we're really seeing the potential that he has, and you can see why he's at a big club like Arsenal.
Oh, that's it. I mean, he's got such amazing quick feet, and the way he turns on the ball, where he's one side of it, and then he spins over the top of it, and then he's suddenly facing the defender. So the defender's expecting him to drop a shoulder, and then he's suddenly facing him. And I think that's what's giving him a chance to ghost round. And when he hit it, I'm thinking it would have been a sort of like a one-man highlight reel of his goals.
He really seems to be enjoying his play as well. I've had Carl Andrews has been doing our photos now for Charlton Live, and some of the photos he's got Steffi, like big smile on his face after his goal as well. Like, he certainly seems to be enjoying it. Now, It was 4 minutes before half time that the smallest man in world football headed an equaliser. Aaron Otsuma used to be on our books as a youngster, played for Dulwich Hamlet, scored hundreds of goals, it seemed, for Dulwich Hamlet in a couple of seasons there. I think he played in Turkey and then he came back to Dulwich. And that gave him the step to get. I think he ended up at Peterborough before going to Walsall as well. So, have we lost out there? Is that one we let go when we should have kept him back in the days?
I mean, yes. Well, I suppose you could say that. I mean,
hindsight, maybe, lovely.
Yeah, maybe it's his height that stops, because he should be playing at a higher level than League One, shouldn't he?
Well, it's halfway
clearly,
that tall, isn't
clearly
it?
Their best player. Yeah. Clearly their best player by a mile. And I mean, he scored 13 goals from this season out of I think that's probably half. Or maybe just less than the amount of goals they've scored totally. So he's so important to them. And even at their place, he ran that midfield to a certain extent when we allowed him to. Such a good player. And he's a busy player as well. He never leaves you alone for a minute. He's one of those annoying players if you're playing against him. But you look up and he's there. And never gives you a moment to settle. So a really good player, and I'd have him in our side, no question about it.
Yeah. And Carl was clearly upset with the way we did concede that goal, though, because similar in fairness to our goal with Aribo arriving in the area, he arrived in the area unmarked and headed it beyond the goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's difficult when you've got 2 6-foot-2 centre halves and the balls were headed in by a 5'3" Sabutio player.
Maybe they literally couldn't see him.
Yeah, he popped up like a gopher. So it's, I thought, to be honest, even though we won 3-1, I thought he was the best player on the pitch yesterday.
Yeah,
I really no, I did. I thought the way his movement, if he'd had other players in their team like him, they'd be flying up that league. But you know, obviously, he's surrounded by lesser players, as it were.
Yeah, he's certainly highly rated, if not highly statured. Aaron Otsuma. Now, so the start of the second half, like I said, we had that massive let off where Lennon got caught, perhaps not. Unawares of what was around him, and gave it to Edwards. It was a bizarre sequence of play, really. So he squared it. Whoever was in the middle looked like an absolute certainty to score before an excellent bit of last-ditch play from Konza won it back. But then it went back to Edwards, and he looked certain to score, and he somehow hit the crossbar from about a yard out. And so a bit of a let-off, and then we go straight down the other end, and Josh has that big chance as well. And like we've already mentioned it, but I mean, he's desperate for a goal now, isn't he, Josh? That one-on-one straight to the keeper.
Well, I think we're all desperate for him to score. I mean, it would have been better if he'd have mishit it, because he hit it far too well and straight at him. If he'd have scuffed it, he might have gone past
If anything, Josh is too good.
Well, yeah, that's the way I'm going for it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it was a let-off, because you know that if Walsall had got their noses in front, then the rest of the game would have been every man behind the ball, not giving us any space at all, and would we have been able to break that down? You'd like to think so with Tariq Fosu coming on, but who knows?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It was a very different game, and it was not long into that second half that Fosu did come on. Now, I mean, we've missed him badly for the last, I think it's over 2 months since he played. Still, he was our top scorer when he went out, and he's still our top scorer now, and that probably says a lot about the form we've been in recently. But just, I mean, I was... when I was walking down to the ground before the game, other half, Amy sort of said, "Oh, I see Fosu's back." And I said, "Yeah, but you know, to be honest, I'm not expecting too much, because when a flair player comes back from injury and stuff, it can take a while." But I was proved massively wrong there, because he was quality.
Well, Carl had said he'd been on fire in training.
Yeah.
So
when I heard that, I thought that's more injuries.
More injuries. But I was pleased that he gave him such a long time. I think you know, he came on 5 minutes into the second half. You know, for Reeves, I think possibly the best move he could have made. You know, I can't say who else he could have taken off. And gave him 40 minutes to run, and he did. And I think every time he got the ball, you just thought, oh, yeah, something's going to happen here. And, you know, he's a bit like Marshall in a way, that he doesn't give a ball away. He's got such good tight control. He's going to get hit, he's going to get knocked. But you don't see him really sort of like knocking it too far ahead of him. He's got it almost tied on a shoelace on the end of his foot.
There was one touch, and I think we were already 2 or 3-1 up at the time, on the left-hand touchline right near us. I mean, how he touched it, kept it in, and moved it, all within the space of about half a yard beyond his man, was just unbelievable. And then he burst into the air and pulled it back for a great chance as well. And that shows, I mean, like you say, the silky touch and the close control that he has. Now, we started seeing half chances. I think Mavididi had a go when he went near post, when Aribo was calling for it on the penalty spot, and also had a header from a corner that was flicked away. Then they had probably their last real decent chance when Bakayoko was slipped through, and his shot deflected into the side netting. And then we hit the post, and it's McGuinness again. You're thinking, oh, at that point, and then followed up with that scramble. I think, oh, it's not going to happen, is it?
No, and you need a bit of luck. I think you sort of felt, oh, is the writing on the wall here? We're going to have all the play, and then we're going to get hit with a sucker punch, or we're just not going to break them down. And every now and again, you just need a little bit of a bit of assistance, and that's what we got.
Yeah, and especially after that scramble we saw when Aribo headed it, and Lennon couldn't force it over the line, and then the goal comes. Now, just a point to make here. Now, the last 20 minutes, I mean, we battered them, mm-hmm. and if you look at in that first half now, and this is all part of it, that first half where we're passing the ball around, they're running around trying to stop us, you're going to get tired. In the last 20 minutes, our fitness and our quality is going to show through, and that's why we turned it on in the second half, and that's why in the first half you do have to be patient, because you know what we're doing.
No question about it. And I think you're never 100% sure, of course, because you know you're relying on the opposition tiring a little bit more than they would normally by playing it like that, but it's a percentage game, and when you've got players who the type of players we've got and the type of players we've brought on that can expose that quite painfully for Walsall's point of view, then it's a good game plan. Mm. You do wonder if the Liverpool side of the 80s would have survived this current era, because that's all they did for best probably 70 minutes of the 90 was play it across the back four, just trying to force the opposition out to them so they could pick them off. And that involves a level of patience.
Yeah. And when the goal did come, it was I can't remember who was it. Slip Mavadidi free. Was it De Silva possibly, or Fosu? I think it was De Silva for the second.
Fosu was the second one. I think it was De Silva for the first.
Yeah. So and Mavadidi's going through, and you feel confident when he's going through that he's going to be able to poke it beyond the keeper. But I mean, he doesn't even have to bother these days. He's got someone in to do it for him.
It's just that mind control he must have as well. They just say, right, now shoot for me, please.
Mm. I mean, that says a lot, really, when the best line of defence you could think of is Ardiscore an own goal.
Well, he didn't really have much option. I mean, he could either tackle Steffi and foul him, penalty, red card potentially, or he can let him go and see if Mavadidi misses from three metres, which he's probably not going to do either. So, but like I say, it happened right in front of me, because I'm right behind the north, and
I enjoyed hearing about your reaction.
I danced like a lunatic.
Trawling the
video. There'll be footage of that somewhere.
We're
all embarrassing
myself.
Searching
the Football League show highlights now to see if we can find you dancing when that ball's rolling in. I was really happy. I was really relieved when that goal went in, because as soon as that went in, I felt right, here we go. We're going to finish this game off now. First time we scored two goals in a league game since the 2-2 draw with Peterborough, which is an incredible thing. That was back at the end of November.
Yeah, those pints must have been stacking up in the
year. So we had that bit of skill from Fosu on the touchline. Just before that, he had an incident where he went down in the penalty area. Carl sort of said to me after he felt it was a penalty. Did you have a view on that? I thought it would have been soft.
I think that's the key. I mean, it's one of those, I think I said on comms, that if it's a foul everywhere else in the pitch except the penalty area, because in the penalty area I think the referee's got to be 100% sure that it was a especially if it's a stop scoring a goal, it was sort of marginal obstruction stroke foul, and as I say, if it had been outside the penalty area we'd probably got a free kick. But it's one of those ones you very rarely get inside.
So there was one more let off really where Walsall were breaking away. I think Ozuma didn't square to the man at the far post, but then we finished it off with Mavadidi. Again, that direct run in, gets towards, cuts inside onto his right, which he does so well. Finishes, the keeper got a hand onto it, but it's just too much spice on that one for him to keep it out.
It did sort of go in slow motion though, didn't it?
Yeah, it was lovely. When he takes it, though, burst between the two players, and you're thinking, you know, which top corner are you going to belt this? And he's just like, no, I'll just roll it very slowly. I don't even think it made the back of a net.
Well, it's that first cutback he does. Yeah. He does that cutback where you think, just shoot. Just, you know, you're one-on-one with a keeper. Just leather it past him. But he chose to drag it back to his right foot, and you're thinking, oh, is the moment gone? At that point, you're wondering if it has, but he's too good for that.
And so the final whistle goes with our 3 points in hand, 3 wins in a row, cementing our place in the playoffs. The most interesting stat was, I remember it was literally 3 games ago, people were saying, we're only playing for sixth now. We're 11 points behind Bradford now. We've won 3 and they've lost all 3. We're now 2 points behind. It's incredible how quickly that's changed. And, all of a sudden I'm looking up again. You know, I think we've got a 2-point cushion in the playoffs, but we're starting to climb up, the chance to climb up into fifth again and keep trying to keep on moving up.
Well, I think, you know, other teams are going to be looking at us and we're not going to be too happy that we've managed to get a bit of form. I mean, I think people looked at us before the start of the season, say we were potentially one of the, you know, top three, top four teams in this division. And, you know, we had the bad period and everyone went, oh, you know, typical. But if, you know, if players are coming back fit, which is every week if we can get a player back and there's a competition and there's maybe some new players coming in, you know, I think we could hit the rest of the season quite strongly.
Well, we've got 16 games, isn't it? Something like that left to go, roughly, of the season. No, a bit more than that, actually. It might be 19, actually, thinking about it.
Yeah,
so,
I'll have to get the calculator out.
Yeah, so it's a lot of points to play for. And of those teams that have got, we've got to play Bradford here, we've got to play Shrewsbury. I think we've got to play Blackburn again, have we?
Yeah, I think four of the top five have got to come here. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's only Wigan we play twice now, I think. So, you know, if they're all going to be huge games. And if we can take points off them, as well as keeping the run going, who knows?
With those players coming back as well. Right, indeed. We want to know what you guys made of yesterday's game.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Game. What are you going to make of what Carl Robinson is about to say here on Charlton Live? You can email us, studio at charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. Head over to the Charlton Live forum. There's a thread on there. And we'll get on to your correspondence after we hear from Carl Robinson. He came in to speak to Terry after yesterday's win. 3-1 home win over Walsall.
I thought we deserved it. I thought Odunez's tackle. I thought we created many, many more chances to win the game. More convincing than that. When you think they've been like the result they had on Saturday, they're not a bad team at all. And today we looked really at it. We were patient in the first half, which was good. And their goal came right against the run of play. And sort of knocked us a little bit and knocked our confidence for the next 5-10 minutes. Or 5 to 7 minutes, whenever it was, the goal towards the end of the first half. Second half, we came back out and we were good.
You bossed it. And then you brought Tariq on in it for a second half, almost virtuoso performance.
He's unreal.
Showed what we'd been missing.
That's why we signed him in the summer. He was someone that we headhunted right from the word go. I'll be honest with you, like to Tariq, if he would have been fit, he could have been a very sellable asset. So I'm half glad he wasn't fit in some ways, and we can now enjoy his talent for the next few years, hopefully, and he can really grow and develop with the football club. He's got to keep his feet firmly on the ground. He's still got things to improve. But I think, obviously, Steffi again today as well, having this young team, it gives us tremendous energy. It's a pleasure to work with him, it really is.
Is it as infectious as it looks? Because it seems to pick everybody up.
Yeah, I laugh at that because, they keep us all young. Keep me, Bo and Jacko young. And music's rubbish. But the dancing's a bit better than ours. But no, it's good. And then you've got like Len and Dill, Ben, Reevesy. And you sort of got Souls. You really sort of keep the older ones, keep it a little bit more sensible. And then you've got the young kids who are just high on life. And playing football for Charlton. And you can see that, can't you? There's a buzz about them, there's a spring in the step, which is enjoyable to watch.
Before the game, we two games on the bounce, two wins on the bounce, almost like a siege mentality in those sort of two victories with what was going on and around the ground. Today was different, I thought. Today was a
very short,
absolutely, yeah. And we were confident on the ball and we were trying stuff. And
yeah, I know people get sometimes frustrated, but you've got to realise that you can't just play forwards all the time. I know people get frustrated with that, but you've got to move them. And our game plan today, and we did a little bit too much, was we felt when we come back to Ben, if we could get into Josh from that, because they were in a very high press, made it very difficult for us to try and get out. And we almost played into that trap second half. We went through one or two things that we knew were going to improve us, and the players took it on board, and that was the case.
I think Mark Marshall, going back across to the right-hand side, stopped Roberts really from coming forward as often as he was in Leahy overlapping.
Yeah, we felt it's nice to make a change to make us better.
And you must be delighted.
with what's going on as well, of course, losing. I mean, I said it in the intro and to lead up to the game. You know, losing Ricky Holmes could be seen as a sort of terminal problem.
Yeah.
But with Tariq coming back to fitness, signing Steffi, and as I said, the infectiousness of their play against the rest of the side.
Yeah, but it's important that you take all things in the same manner, results and defeats. We have the summer to enjoy or to reflect or to be negative about whatever we've achieved or not achieved. But whilst you're in the midst of something, the more and more you focus on negative things will actually turn out to be a reality and compound bad things as well. We have to break free from that and break the chains and move forward and fire the engines up. And there's a buzz around the training ground at the moment. Three wins obviously does that as well. There's a buzz in the dressing room. I let them have a drink on the coach for the first time ever in my managerial career on Saturday because I felt they deserved it. I thought they went through on Saturday. And there's the togetherness in that group, which is pleasing to see. And yeah, it's infectious. You could see us all laughing on the bench, and it is. We're a really close group of people, and we really care for the team that we work for and play for.
And it shows on the pitch, and it shows in the three wins now that we've had, and vital wins really, because you know we've dropped points against lesser teams, if you want to use that word in the past, in the previous weeks and months and even seasons. So actually putting teams like this to the sword must give you a real buzz as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember sat with only four or five games to go, and I think we were on 46 points last year. So it was we couldn't get off that number, and we get to that tally very, very quickly this year. It should be quicker. We should be above 50 by now. But it's not. You can't dwell on that. You can only control whatever's ahead of us. I think there's 17 games to go, is it something like that? So it's a lot of football still to play, a lot of points to play for. And you've got to make sure that you treat every single game with the right amount of intensity and application and desire. But take your chance when they come along. But scoring three goals will give us that little bit of a boost that I think we've needed.
Yeah, 10 days to go, sorry, in this dreaded transfer window. You've mentioned before you've got the money to spend on the salaries at least, and I know there's at least one loan signing possibly coming in. Are you more scared about losing anybody than signing people?
Yeah, we've got to be on our toes for that. It's been a difficult week still. It looks really smooth from the outside, but it's been hard. It's been a very tasking week for all of us. And we've got to make sure that we keep it strong. I think from an external perspective, you wouldn't have seen that. But everybody around the building just worked wonderfully hard. I'm so proud of everyone.
And on to Blackpool next week.
It's only Blackpool in January.
As long as the weather holds. But you'll be confident for that one now.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard. But they all are. There's no easy game in football, unfortunately. And it's not like on the continent where you can predict an awful lot of victories and how it's going to manoeuvre. And in our game, in our country, there's an unpredictability that's unrivalled to anywhere else because we have a better dedication and application to what we do. So every game, if you don't conduct yourself in the right manner with the same respect, you'll find yourself getting beaten. That's a 100%, that's a fact. So we've got to go with the right mentality. There's an amazing amount of respect for Gary and his players and for their fans and for what they do as a club. And then we've got to go there and we've got to perform to the best of our ability as well. But certainly this doesn't look like a football club in a place where it is, with the fans in there and the players in there today. And hopefully we can kick this on and move forward.
Well done today.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Cheers. This is what we came here for. Conte does superbly well to win it off of Maloney. And now set up Ahern Grant on the left-hand side of the penalty area. Ahern Grant, little step over, ball back across, behind everybody. It's going to be picked up by Forster Kaski on the other side of the penalty area. Forster Kaski, left foot shot. What a goal!
What a finish!
What a belter from Jake Forster Kaski to absolutely round off a glorious afternoon for the Addicts.
Welcome back, it's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Good to hear from Carl Robinson there, the Charlton manager, came in to speak to Terry after yesterday's win in good spirits. Also now, of course, he mentioned loan signing. Now, he sort of said it in all these interviews yesterday. He said there's one loan signing that he believed he'd got over the line yesterday and a different one. And then there was a different one that we all knew about that he's still working on. So that was Sully Kaikai, the Palace player that we all know about. Now, the other one we knew was a striker, Polish, and now Richard Corley. You can always trust old big dog Cawley to do some digging and find out who he is. He believes it's a Mikel Ziro will be joining us on loan from Wolverhampton Wanderers. Just checking out his stats. I mean, he scored 3 goals in his first couple of games for Wolves. Then he suffered a nasty injury by the looks of it. So he hasn't played too much football this season. I think he's only had a couple of appearances, both in the EFL Cup earlier on in the season. Obviously, that's a Wolves team. Actually, he flying in the Championship, although apart from the last couple of weeks. But so not an easy team to be breaking into when you're coming back from injury. So don't know much about him other than he's a tall Polish left-footed striker.
Well, I've just seen a few Charlton fans, excuse me, have mentioned it on Twitter, and one of some Wolves fans have replied back. One says he's tall, strong, and quick, can play as a winger or a striker. Great personality and attitude as he had to battle back from one of the worst injuries ever suffered by a Wolves player. So, and the other one says, you know, he hasn't played regularly in a top Championship side, but that, you know, it might be too intense for him to come straight back into a high flying Championship side. So it could be a perfect outlet for him. But you'd guess if he can play as a striker, that's where we'll potentially use him, because you know, with Tariq coming back now, with Steffi, with Mark Marshall, we're a bit oversubscribed on wingers, aren't we?
Well, yeah, and also loan players is the only
that's another thing, yeah.
The problem, yeah. So I think so. If we get Kai and this striker Ziro, I'll find out how to pronounce his name at some point. I think, will that make us 4 or 5 possibly? I think it's 5 and maximum you can have in a match day. Well, you've got De Silva and you've got Amos as
Ben
well.
Amos
so
and De Silva.
I think that's Steffi. It. So because obviously Steffi as well, yeah. So that would be 5. And obviously you can only have, I think you can only have 5 in your match day squad or something. So it'd be interesting to see how we have to get around that problem. There's another problem that Roland's decision has created, that I'm sure he either didn't know or didn't care, that if you have a certain amount of loanees, you can't play them. So effectively, it's not the same as bolstering your squad.
Back in the day, it would have been loan players from, or they wouldn't be loaned, they'd be sort of semi-sold from within the network.
Within the network, yeah.
But that hasn't been happening, so obviously he hasn't grasped the difference.
What was that fella, the one who was really rubbish?
Christophe
Lapoire, yeah.
How long have we got?
Yeah. I was surprised you guessed the right one there, actually.
No, because exactly, as soon as you said about getting back from me, I'm thinking, oh no, yeah, please no.
Not Lapoire, but yeah, he was a perfect example of that. Right, let's have don't forget, we've got coming up shortly our interview with Richard Wiseman, the CAA, the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust chair. He was part of that meeting with Richard Murray yesterday, who were demanding answers from the directors. So we'll listen to that in a few minutes' time. But let's just go through the tweets on yesterday's game, and then we'll go through the emails on yesterday's game after. The first one's coming from James Moyngard. Says, wasn't at the game yesterday, but from the highlights it looked decent. Good to get 3 goals and hit the word twice. If we get the signings in with at least one being a striker, and then they're decent, then I think with players coming back, we should cement the playoffs. Games against other teams around playoffs are key. Need to be getting at least a point from them. Bradford and Shrewsbury will tell us a lot, in my opinion. What do you guys think? With regards to Richard Murray, I think he probably does have our interests at heart, but he hasn't shown it in public, which makes people think badly of him. The dialogue was only going to be positive, and hopefully we can have new owners in to build for next season and hopefully sneak up through the playoffs this year, which would be great. So we'll come to the Richard Murray stuff in a minute, but he mentioned said that it will be fascinating to see how we get on now that players are coming back against the likes of Shrewsbury. I mean, we should have been playing Shrewsbury this Tuesday if it wasn't for the stupid EFL trophy that's cost me my train ticket fare, but yeah, it would have been an interesting game.
I think we would have probably, you know, if it's the right time to play them at the moment. I think they're in a touch of a slump,
chucked away a 2-goal lead yesterday,
yeah. And you know, they're not, you know, most all the clubs are going to go through it. Maybe Wigan haven't. Of the only team really in our league who haven't had a slump as such, but you know, other teams are getting beaten.
But on the other end, we get an extra week off. We don't have to play midweek. They've got to play a midweek game, and so who will that benefit more? Hopefully us.
Hopefully. Ian Clements says, let's take the positives from yesterday. 3 points. There's no proposed fire sale. A sale is possibly in February. No cons a bid yet. Robinson is the right manager. It may change next week, but let's enjoy the weekend. We sort of mentioned it perhaps over the last couple of weeks, but if you think about how Carl Robinson had been received over the last few weeks when we went through that winless streak, I mean, it's certainly turned around again now a little bit. And I've always said that when we're winning, everyone will love him, and he's you know, waffling on, and when we're losing, everyone will find it really frustrating. But it's because we're winning, everyone's happy at the moment.
It's true. I mean, he bubbles. That's what we say. You know, he does bubble when he's happy and he's chirpy and he's chippy. And obviously, like all of us, when he's feeling a bit down over a situation, it shows you know, it's quite hard to come out and be upbeat and positive if you think you're being dragged into something, you're losing players. And he's looking at worst case scenario. You know, he's lucky some players coming back now. I mean, I don't know whether with this, if we get players coming back and we get players in on loan, whether he'll look to send a few out on loan from us. I was thinking maybe Rico, possibly Carlin. I would say he'd probably keep, but yeah, maybe Carlin and Hanlon to go back out again. So it'll be interesting to see who comes and goes in the next 10 days.
Mm. I've heard there's been a lot of things about Carl and saying, well, he knew what he was getting into with the regime, and I think there's a correctness in that. But I just think he was in a no-lose situation, Carl, because nobody could necessarily foresee what has happened over the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks or whatever it is, you know, losing Ricky Holmes and then this sort of will we, won't we get sold scenario that's going on at the minute. But he would have known that there would be at some point in his reign here with the owners that we've got some controversies to deal with, and that's what he's been good at in his career, certainly with MK Don. So
yeah,
I think
he came from a club that's very existent.
I think he's
controversial,
adequately so. Prepared for you know, and for such things, and I think he's come out with some credit in the last few weeks, because I don't think yesterday necessarily, but the previous two results were almost siege mentality wins. I don't think yesterday was, but I think the previous ones were, where, you know, backs to the wall type wins, and that's given him a lot of credit, I think.
Milton Keynes have just sacked their manager.
Yeah, Robbie Nielsen.
Do you think they'd be tempted to come back in for him again?
Well, they've got no chance. But it had gone sour for him there. Yeah. So I was going to say, I wonder if they regret that decision now. But it had gone sour for him at the time. So who knows? Tom Whalley and our very own was just trying to show off that he's on holiday still.
Yeah, that's
a tweet. Yeah, but I hope you bang your head when you get in the swimming pool. Right, Reese tweeted in his iPhone Notes message. A very pleasing performance and result. I thought we attacked very well and looked dangerous pretty much all game. Still question marks over the defence, though. Very nice to see us score more than one goal, and I feel much more comfortable about our attacking options now. Mavididi and Fossey were superb, and great to see Mavididi has an end product too, which we so desperately needed. Lennon was dodgy again and almost cost us at the start of the second half. McGuinness had to score that 1-1 too. Was a poor effort, and yet another game without a goal. I think that's 14 he's on now from memory. We really need this new Polish striker to be as good, as it's hard to see us making the top six playing one striker who can't score. Other than that, everyone played well, I think. So crucial that key players stay fit as squad depth is still appalling, and we're only a few injuries from not filling the bench again. If we get that situation again, then we have no hope. And that is a thing that I felt yesterday. It's like injury crisis is just starting to ease off now, and there's still Piercy and the likes and Bauer, who we haven't seen for a little while. But just, I think a player like Fosu coming back and Solly now, I just feel like it's getting a bit closer, and it's easing off a bit, and that's going to help us massively.
No question about it. But we do need one or two of those three centre halves back that are currently out. PSC, obviously, Patrick Bauer, even Ebisar. You know, you can't really now. I know that generally speaking, it looks like we've got quite a strong squad now. But in that net, whereas before we said, we're comfortable at centre half. If either if Ezri gets sold or gets injured, then we've only got one centre half fit.
Hmm. Right, let's have another look at the tweets. Frank said, a great win yesterday, second half was very good, and Ariba was my man of the match. On the way out, there seemed to be more fans queuing up for the free pint than there were in the ground. Just so, in case anyone hasn't actually got that reference, by the way. So in Crossbars, it's not quite all season, but since, you know, at least for 3 months now, they've been saying that if we win a home game and score 3 goals during that home game, then they're going to give out the first 500 people in Crossbars get a free pint. Now, I mean, I often meet my other half in there after the game, so she goes there after full time. I'm still working, and normally it's not a problem getting there. She said yes, there was a massive queue. Normally it's not 500 people in there, but I think yesterday, I managed to get a free pint by the time I turned up. One of my mates,
I'll tell you what, if they were watching the game with Tariq Fosu coming back, Steffi Mavididi in the side, we're just signing another winger and a striker, they'll be absolutely pooing themselves over for the remainder.
Well,
of the season,
we'll come in next time and it'll be like three points and you get a half shot glass.
Yeah. It was Heineken though, so it didn't taste very nice. But free beer is free beer. Right, let's. I think it's time we should have a listen to our interview with the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust. We've still got plenty of emails and stuff which we'll come to after the interview, but I know a lot of you guys are on tenterhooks to hear what Richard Wiseman had to say. He's the chair of the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust. Now, as we know, the Coalition Against Roland du Châtelet, the protest group, announced at the beginning of last week that they were going to have a rally before yesterday's game in order to demand answers from Richard Murray, the only director sort of left at the club, really, based in England. Because fans have plenty of worries about the takeover, the transfer situation, a potential fire sale of players because you're asset stripping, whatever people want to call it. So people have plenty of worries. Now, when Card released that statement, Richard Murray decided to act before the rally took, you know, needed to take place. So he sort of nipped that in the bud and said it will come down and have a sit down with the Supporters Trust. The Supporters Trust are part of Card. They've been very vocal in their unhappiness at how the club has been run over the last few years. But Richard Murray agreed to sit down with a couple of them, including Richard Wiseman, who we're about to hear from here, to try and just have some open discussions, basically. And Richard Wiseman, I caught up with him on the phone earlier to find out what happened in that meeting.
Well, I think it's pretty well known the meeting came about when Richard contacted us middle of last week. Seemed to me to be a very sensible and positive response on his part. And, you know, it obviously followed the Card statement which was made and the talk about the car park protest. He approached us and suggested that the meeting would be a productive way to go forward, and we agreed, and we were very pleased that he came to us because, you know, the trust, Supporters Trust relationship with Richard has been a little bit frosty over the last couple of years, as you can imagine, we were pleased to see that he still recognised that the Supporters Trust is the appropriate supporters body to communicate with generally, but particularly, I think, in situations like this. So that was all very good, I thought.
Mm. And so the meeting happened before yesterday's game, and obviously you went in with a list of concerns, and the first one, reading your statement about the meeting after from last night, the first one was about how the sale of the club is going. Obviously, it's well publicised that Roland du Châtelet is trying to sell Charlton, but it seems to be taking a sort of a while to go through, and fans are becoming a bit concerned, in particular with the fact that we're in January at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we took as our starting point approaching the meeting in general the Card statement, which said we need to hear from Richard Murray about the club's immediate future. So we took the view that any news on sale process and any information about currently what's happening with player recruitment or signing loans, etc., what we're going to be at the front of people's minds. So clearly we needed to get as much as we could from him about the sale process, and as you see from reading the summary that we've produced, he, I guess, gave us as much as he felt he could, but he was very much stressing his role as not being party to negotiations, but playing a role of promoting the club, talking about the club, talking it up to people who might be interested. So that's what he said he did. I think for me, I didn't realise this till after the meeting, really, but what was positive about that part of the discussion was that, in Richard's view, there's no doubt about the fact that Roland is going to sell the club. And when I went out of the meeting, I realised that when I'd come in, you know, I had still perhaps feeling that, you know, we'd heard all about how stubborn Roland could be and how much he had plenty of money and he didn't need to sell. And he may be being completely unrealistic about what the club's value is. And that, therefore, you know, it wouldn't have been out of the question for 12 months' time then still to be owning the club or to go into next season with him still as owner. And Richard really clearly seemed to think that would not be the case. And although it may not happen in February, it would happen, you know, later this year. So for me, that definitely made me leave the room with a bit more of a spring in my step.
Yeah, because did Richard mention that he felt that February seemed like a realistic target date, perhaps?
No, he was, you know, he very much emphasised that, you know, he may be wrong. So I don't think, he certainly didn't talk in terms of targets. He just thought it would be the most likely month for a conclusion of the sale.
Hmm.
That's all.
And there was a rumour going around yesterday that Rick Everett tweeted about that staff may have been told there was a preferred bidder. I mean, did Richard mention anything along those lines?
No, I mean, I wasn't aware of that when we went into the meeting. And I suspect from his general approach to giving us information about what's going on and in terms of non-disclosure agreements and him presenting largely that he wasn't particularly in the know, that, he wouldn't have said anything particular about a preferred bidder. But no, that issue didn't come up, although he did say that his understanding was that one party was further along than another.
With the fact that it is Roland's business to sell, I guess would it be fair to say that Richard Murray wouldn't be the person who would know exactly what was going on and wouldn't be able to give us the best update, I guess, in that case?
Exactly. I mean, that's what he was strongly stressing,
Also, you mentioned in your statement that you also were asked, Richard, about what he knew about the potential of a fire sale of players. I think a lot of fans have been worried about that, having seen what potentially happened at Standard Liège when Roland left there and having seen the exit of Ricky Holmes recently. Did he give you many assurances on that?
Well, I mean, his view, unequivocally expressed, was that there was not going to be a fire sale. And actually, I just this morning looked up the definition of fire sale because it's a phrase that's been bandied about quite a lot recently, and I thought it might be useful to be clear what it means. And it actually is a sale of goods at extremely discounted prices, typically when the seller faces bankruptcy. And it originated in reference to the sale of goods at heavy discount due to fire damage. I think we've been using it almost instead of talking about asset stripping, because certainly it appears from the outside that what happened at Standard Liège with everything that couldn't be nailed down was sold. Now, what Richard said was that he didn't think that was going to happen. He recognised but the point that we made that, you know, mass sales of players obviously does affect the value of the club, and therefore one would assume the sale price. But his view was that Ricky Holmes going shouldn't be seen as the beginning of a mass clear out and of trying to collect as much cash as possible. And he was very clear that Carl was not unhappy about being able to use Ricky's wages on goal scorers. I think having seen yesterday's performance, you know, we're not absolutely short of creative people who can run with the ball and etc. So that may be quite a pragmatic approach. Obviously, the discussion about Ezri Konsa was crucial, and Richard's view was that the club would prefer him not to go. It would be difficult to say no, as I'm sure it was with Joe Gomez and Adamola Lookman, if a wonderful offer came along for him. And that if that happened, then that still didn't mean we were talking about a fire sale. It still didn't mean we were looking at a massive asset strip. And people will take a view on that, I suppose, according to, you know, to what extent they trust Richard Murray.
And were you able to raise the concern, perhaps, about the lack of permanent signings that would come in this January? And did Richard have a view on that?
Well, what I was very interested to find out was what, if any, influence or persuasiveness does Richard have with Roland de Châtelet? And I think that'll be a fascinating question when Roland de Châtelet is no longer involved with the club at all. I can imagine Richard will talk a little bit more frankly about some of the discussions he's had over the years with Roland. And, you know, maybe he's tried to exert influence and failed. Maybe he's tried to exert some influence in the past and succeeded. And he wasn't going to talk about that yesterday. But what he did say was that if Ezri Konsa was sold, that he, Richard, would forcibly try to make the argument to Roland that some of that money should be invested in permanent signing, and that he felt he had a reasonably good prospect of persuading him. Now, who knows? I do wonder whether the statement put on the club website that said there would be no concert could go on the last day of the deadline, and nothing can be done.
Yeah, I guess it will remain to be seen what comes out of that. Now, finally, you raised the absence of senior permanent staff at the club at the moment. We know we've lost Katrine, so we no longer have a CEO. It is mentioned, of course, that David Joyce, the chief finance officer, is set to leave soon. So you raised that point as well. Was Richard able to give you some assurances on that one as well?
Yes, I mean, he. I think that ties in also with his reasonable optimism that the thing will resolve itself in the next month. He was very clear that the club can tick over from day to day in a reasonable manner with a slightly skeleton staff. And it was clear that David Joyce would be replaced, albeit maybe on a temporary basis. So he was, you know, long-term, he was saying clearly this wouldn't be a way to run a football club. You know, you need to have someone with vision, planning ahead, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of getting by day to day, it could be done. and that he was certainly, you know, prepared to do that for a couple of months. I don't think that's been the greatest concern of supporters, of course, but, you know, compared with the speed of the sale and the transfer window and stuff. But he seemed pretty relaxed about that. And obviously he does have some experience in running the club day to day, going back a lot of years. So we felt okay about that.
Yeah. So overall, do you feel that Richard gave you sort of what you were hoping for from the meeting? Did you come out feeling more informed, maybe more positive or anything like that?
Well, I've never left a meeting with Richard Murray over quite a few years now without feeling, you know, a little bit more buoyant than when I went in. And that's to do with the way Richard is. He has that effect. We certainly came out with more information. I went through what we wrote up this morning, and I reckon there were about 10 or 12 things which I didn't know before I went in. And I hope other Charlton supporters will feel the same. They've got some more information. And the extent to which people feel more positive as a result of it, as I say, will rather depend on how they see Richard and what credibility they give him. But for me, the club is going to be sold. And we don't know the exact time scale, but there does seem to be no question that it's not going to happen. And we can put our black and white scarves away and get our red and white ones out. And there are a lot of people looking forward to that.
Yeah, certainly. And I guess some people will have said over the last 4 years under Roland du Châtelet that a lack of communication with the fans, or perhaps, you know, with official supporters trusts like yourselves, may have been one of the major stumbling blocks. Do you think like a meeting like this with Richard Murray over the last 4 years might have helped to ease that, or perhaps even if Roland du Châtelet himself had been a bit more available for the supporters trust, would things have perhaps gone slightly smoother over the last few years?
Well, I think you can actually overstress that, because how do you communicate the decision to appoint Carol Fry to come and manage Charlton Athletic?
That's a fair point.
You know, you can have the most smooth-tongued, mellifluous person to talk you through that. The fact is, you know, it's the underlying information that the problem, isn't it? So, and as I said earlier, you know, it would be fascinating to know what, if anything, Richard tried to say about that appointment, and you know, a few other things that we can you know, easily come up with. So it's not all, you know, clearly communication could have been better. Richard is very good at communication and Katrine wasn't. But you know, sometimes it's actually, it's a thing about putting lipstick on a pig, isn't it? I think anybody would have been pretty challenged to say, you know, you'd start coming out with the old, oh yes, we interviewed 23 people and, you know, it very soon emerged that Luzon was the best candidate. I don't know how you present that better, you know. So yeah, obviously, seriously, I mean, communication with the supporters trust. I think what I would say is that we admire the situation at Fulham Football Club. We're in close contact with their supporters trust. Their trust has regular meetings with the chief executive there. They have a memorandum of understanding of how they will communicate. There is a good level of trust and confidence between the two parties, and it works well. And of course, although we didn't have the formality of supporters' trusts then, of course we've seen all that working very well at Charlton, you know, not that many years ago. So we know it can be well done, positively done. So I was pleased that Richard felt that it was the supporters' trust he should meet. You know, we are by far the largest supporter organisation, etc., etc., democratically elected and constituted, etc. And I would very much hope that new owners coming in would want to respect the traditions and history of the club and its good history and reputation for supporter involvement and have that at the core of their new approach. Of course, we wait to see who they are.
Halfway. Little chip ball looking for the runner Fosu, who's onside. Fosu, edge of the penalty area. Can he get a shot away? He can, and it's the opening goal. Tariq Fosu sprung the offside trap, gets his second goal of the season, and Charlton's first of the evening. And they're 1-0 up here at the Banksy Stadium.
We showed until the last second a good desire, and they got rewarded for it. So they still, the whole team show that they really want, really want, really want. Want, really, really want. Want, really, really want. Really, really, really. If you want
to be my lover. Welcome back, it's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio.
Never gets old.
Yeah, I know, trying to communicate that decision. I thought, I want to play it again. Good to hear from Richard Wiseman there. Of the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust, what did we learn? What did we learn, Terry?
You could argue that the meeting may not have happened had it not been for Card trying to force the issue, and should that have been the case? But let's draw a line in that and say, look, it was just good that we got some communication from Richard Murray. Some people say it's too late, but maybe it's a case now looking forward rather than keep looking back. We know that the end is nigh. How nigh, we're not sure completely. Did we get all the answers? Probably not, but I think we got more information in that meeting with the trust, and they should be applauded for that, than we've had for a long while. So in that sense, it's positive. If that's the way we can go forward from now, fantastic.
Do you think? How do you think Richard Murray will position himself after any takeover? Because I guess there'll be, for some fans over the last couple of years, they may have been frustrated with his role in the current regime. For others, they might not. They might look at what he achieved with the club before that and not worry about it. I've mentioned many times, if it wasn't for him, people like him, then in my youth, I wouldn't have seen us playing in the Premier League for years. How do you think he'll be seen after this?
It's difficult to tell. It's different when new owners come in, what they will expect his role to be in the club. Really, it is hard because there's been, negative years. And there's been, other stuff behind the scenes which he's done, which hasn't been probably as publicised as well. It's like everything, you're almost judged on the last thing you've done. So if there's a negative reaction from the last couple of years, that's going to be sort of like the lasting image.
Excellent. Right, so like I say, it's great for Richard Wiseman from the Supporters Trust to join us there, and Heather's got straight on the forum and say, Louis, very grateful, but can you remind people it's only £5 for a year's membership of the Supporters Trust. So yeah, if you want to join up with them, head over to the Trust website, search for them on Google or look for them on Twitter. Only £5 for a year's membership, and a lot of people feel that a membership of a supporters trust is like a union in a way for supporters, and it's a very useful thing to do. Also had a couple of messages on the forum. Kiwi Valley says, hello from New Zealand, enjoying the show. The end may not be in sight, but we now know there is an end. I hope that buoys the fans that are still going to games. We may just go on a bit of a run now as well. He says he's off to the beach after the show finishes. Now,
there's no need for that.
Yeah, really? There is a general rule on the show that you're not allowed to mention when you're on the beach. And I've had two people in the last 5 minutes now, because Tom Wallin's on the beach currently as well. Now showing us his free beer he's getting on. He's all exclusive resort somewhere. I think he's in Margate or somewhere.
Bound to be, yeah.
Yeah. Bob Liscombe says, is Richard Murray a director? I thought he'd resigned last year due to illness. Now, I think that's his official role now.
Is it acting? I'm not sure.
Before that, he was an executive. I don't know what you call it, but he's been referred to on the club website recently as director, so that's what I've been going with as well. Right, let's have a look at the emails that have come out of yesterday. Don't forget, you still can have your say on yesterday's game or on what you've just heard from Richard Wiseman there about the meeting yesterday with the director, Richard Murray. So you can email the studio at charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can leave a message on the Charlton Live forum where there's a thread for tonight's show. Chris Davin is always the first one in. Thanks for your email, Chris. This is what you had to say. It says, so I ventured down to the valley and I witnessed a win. I'll take 3 points all day long, but I'm a bit sick of all this adulation of Carl Robinson. We are in a pub league with an awful owner. We could have bought our way out of this league, but sadly Roland has turned out to be tight when it comes to player spending. Saying that our squad is bigger and better than all bar Wigan and Blackburn in this league. Three wins on the spin is an achievement, but come on, Oldenbury and Walsall are hardly the toughest fixtures you could get. First half, we were pretty woeful, passing around, getting nowhere. Amos had as many touches as anyone. Second half, we came alive in the last 15 minutes, coinciding with Fosu coming on and the once again completely anonymous Reeves going off. We created chances in that last 15 minutes, enough to win 4 or 5 games. Got to feel for Big Josh, clean through 1-1, and you knew he would miss. Aribo is quality, the same Aribo who played well last season, fell out of favour this season with Robinson, saying he would loan him out before the injury crisis. Aribo has to start for me, but he's twice the player that Reeves is. We're doing okay, but all this Robinson is amazing. How he's handled the sale rumours, etc., blah, 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 is complete nonsense. I think it's a generation thing. Youngsters love all the corny rhetoric. Us old timers don't. I mean, tell you, you're the oldest person I know. I mean, are you a fan of Carl? I've got the impression that from Chris's emails over the weeks that he's not. And I can see while Carl's, you know, rhetoric or speaking a lot can rub people up the wrong way.
I'm certain that's true. Yeah. And it may be a case of the fact that we see him a lot more than anybody, you know, than the normal fans, let's say. We see him when he's off. And talk to him when he's off air. It's very difficult to dislike Carl.
Yeah.
Very difficult, because he is quite an infectious character in that respect. And I think, look, if we were a stable, in a stable position as a club, then maybe Carl Robinson wouldn't have been the choice. Certainly probably wouldn't have been my choice either. But I think in the position we're in, and where we've been in the last, 4 years, I think I think he's almost perfect for the role in some ways, and I say in some ways because that's what he always says.
Yeah, he does say in some ways a lot. And he also says, and that's as truthful as I can be as well.
So yeah, I can understand he splits opinions. Some people think he talks too much, and I get that. But at the end of the day, and the thing about the pub league, you know, we've been in this pub league for a number of years over the 50-odd off supporting Charlton. So everything's relative. You just got to get out of here. When you're out of this league, then you can start concentrating on maybe improving your lot and the playing staff, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, in some ways, you've got to bring in journeyman players, you know. And you know, that's what Chris Powell did. Chris Powell brought in people that people didn't expect and clicked as a team. You know, that he probably knew for sure wouldn't survive in the Championship. But you've just got to get out of this division.
Interesting to see how Pally gets on if he does indeed go to Southend, by the way, which is what seems to be the rumour over the last few weeks. Chris mentioned in his email there, he referred to the anonymous Ben Reeves. Mark, your view on that? Is he anonymous?
Reeves isn't not my first choice.
He's not a winger either.
No, but he did a really lovely turn on the touchline yesterday and drove in. I think it's what I'll notice about him most is that if he gets the ball, his first reaction is literally to do that 360 degree turn with it at all times. And you're thinking, no, look, you've got the ball, you're facing the right way, just go with it. You don't need to keep doing that. We haven't seen the best of him. I'd like him to put himself about a bit more. I don't know. I find it hard to mount a defence of Ben Reeves because I'm not a fan.
I think until he plays in the position he's supposed to play in, which I'm pretty sure was a sort of number 10 or sitting in that sort of midfield role, until he plays there regularly, it's difficult to comment. He's definitely not. He hasn't got the pace for him. He doesn't get back to, as I mentioned earlier, backtrack. So I think he was playing in that position because we had nobody else. I think with Tariq Fosu fit, he'll be on the bench.
But if you've got everyone fit, I was going to say, you know, he's a bench player at best.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, he certainly, it was like the thrill of the chase throughout the summer when we were waiting to sign him as well. And I was When he turned up at the Ipswich friendly, I was on holiday, but someone messaged me a photo of him at the game. I was like, oh, he's there, and put it out, and everyone got excited, and it's taken him forever to get fit. And you know, he's put in a couple of decent performances recently. Away at Blackburn, he was our man of the match, and I don't think he was too shabby at Bury last week. He looked quite tidy as well. So, you know, perhaps we're still waiting to see the Ben Reeves that we were really hoping to see. I mean, he scored a few goals in his first few appearances. Obviously, they're all, you know, cup games and whatnot. But
we picked up two players of the season in the summer. We picked up Marshall. Yeah. We picked up Reeves, who won player of the season for their club previous. And you've got to think yourself, you know, either of those players has shown us why they.
But is that because of the constraints put on them when they're actually in the side? You know, Ben, as I said earlier, Mark Marshall, has got to backtrack and cover Chris Holly a lot, so he isn't going forward as much as he was before. Ben Reeves hasn't played in his natural position, I don't think, often enough to warrant a genuine assessment of how he is. So maybe just coming into this club at the moment, it's tough to hit the ground running. When you're asked to do something that maybe you're not conditioned to doing.
True, but you probably think, well, we got these players because of what they've done in the positions they were, and then you say, well, we want you to do something else. It seems a bit daft to think, so hold on a minute, I'm not that
but
really that
injuries
strength.
Might dictate that, though.
True, man. Yeah.
Mendonca's right first actually just tweeted in response to Chris's email. Says, I don't understand people not liking Robinson. Robinson, his passion shines through, and it's getting through to the players as well, and I'm not one of the younger generation. I do feel like perhaps Chris is slightly one of a minority, just in case of not liking Robinson too much. I mean, there are people out there who don't, but I just looking at the forums and tweets and stuff yesterday, I do get the impression he's reasonably popular, and a lot of people are saying that he's done a good job, especially in the circumstances that we've had over the last few weeks. And like I say, I mean, me and Terry might be clouded, because like I say, we get to interact with him before interviews and stuff, and he is quite an affable chap. And quite a funny guy, but at the same time, you know, I'm still going to judge him on results on the pitch, even if I do like him as a bloke. And results on the pitch are, you know, pretty much where we should be at the moment, and I'm enjoying it.
Well, I'd probably sit somewhere between you and Terry, in sort of like age wise and watching Charlton wise, you know, because it's like 35 years I've seen us. So yeah. I think yourself, mostly that was Kirbishley and Lenny Lawrence, you know, who you think yourself in this day and age, those kind of managers really you don't find any more. The thinkers, you know, Robinson, I think he's a reactionary.
Yeah.
So you ask him a question, and he'll generally come out and try and give you the most genuine answer he could, as opposed to some spiel where, if you look in the microcosm, which is the Premiership, and the questions they're asking some of those managers, and that, like, intimate questioning, and you think yourself, you're not getting the right answers from those managers. They're giving you the same old. Robinson, I think, is speaking from the heart.
I think, didn't he say, I'm trying to think where he said it, but didn't he say the other day when somebody asked him about takeover rumours and that, didn't he say, well, they're probably not telling me now because they know I tell you.
Yeah, it was on Thursday's press conference. Yeah. He said that. We're also actually having just to show how aware he is of certain things, we were having a laugh yesterday before the interview about the queue for the 3 pints. in Crossbars, because like I said, we were talking about it just before we went on air, and I said, oh, my other half said there's a massive queue up there, and he's like, yeah, it sounds about right.
So I would have liked it at 3-1 up if someone had just leant across from behind him and given him a cup of tea.
Yeah, like you said, it very right. Steve Catley emailed in, hi chaps, I don't have a problem with the passing about thing to tire the opposition out, but when the opposition really are sitting off by 30 yards or more and aren't coming out at all, the passing across the back four does become frustrating. Movement ahead then causes the opponents the problem, and a few times first half that movement just wasn't there. It was still, though, it was a great second half performance. Fosu, Mavididi, Aribo and Marshall all just want to run at the defence, which causes a bit of panic, especially at this level, Steve. That's from Steve Catley, thanks for your email. And that is a good point.
That's a genuine point.
The fact that we can run at players when we have tired them out. And like I say, maybe Cole even said it in his interview, he felt we perhaps did it too much yesterday. Yeah. But that is why we do it. And then so that's when tired legs come into play and you've got Fosse coming off the bench. I mean, imagine if you knackered yourself out against the likes of Mark Marshall and Aribo running at you, and all of a sudden we're bringing on Fosu, who's like a steam train running at you with so much finesse as well. That's not what a tired defender wants to see. Seb Lewis says, I said yesterday on Facebook that if Carl takes us up this season, given the circumstances, he will need to be given a new contract. But I think
that's not going to happen, is it? Because it depends who takes us over. I mean, isn't it normally the case when new owners come in and they want a clean sweep, regardless of what happens? So be actually very interesting to see that, depending on how well we do and how that's perceived by whoever takes us over.
Mm. Kiwi Values joined in the debate on Carl and says, Carl Robinson's win record and under the circumstances is as good as you could hope for, isn't it? Let him gob off as long as he keeps the ragtag team focused. I don't care if his interviews are fulsome. And I agree with you there, Mr. Kiwi Value. Right, we had a DM from Charlton Soul, says on the Richard Murray situation, says, for me, Richard Murray has been totally complicit in the demise of our club over the last 4 years. Saturday's meeting was a PR stunt as he desperately tries to stay relevant as the regime he played an active role in uploading crumbles. He sells himself as Mr. Charlton, but he is and always has been in it for his own ego. When the club needed him in their hour of need, he turned his back on us. We'd love to see him get the boot under the new owners. He chose his side. He failed us. Your views on that, Mark? I understand that he was one of the ones who put a lot of money to get the club back to the Valley. So, in terms, if that's an ego thing, I mean, it's
yeah.
I'm not sure about that personally, but
I don't know. Obviously, having to deal with, you know, our little Belgian Führer on a day-to-day day-to-day basis, you know, it's going to be difficult for most people, and there's so much he could do at that time. You're thinking if he tries, can't really walk away with the investment he's put in over all the years. He's the target at the moment, I think, because I'm thinking when Catriona was here, she was the target because Roland wasn't here. Now she's gone, and you know, it's more people coming out and digging at him.
I think he's been subject to criticism, and I think some of it's quite right. He has, you know, Richard's been quiet, chosen to be quiet. Now there may be lots of reasons for that we don't know about. I think he has got a lot invested in this club, and I don't just mean money, by the way. I mean, you know, he's put in a lot of shift, time, personal circumstances dictated that you know, he lost stuff while he's been at this club as well. So, you know, I've got a lot of time for Richard. Had a lot of time for Richard. I agree in some with many of the comments about I think he hasn't done himself any favours by staying quiet. But I don't know the truth behind. I'd like to speak to him one to one and ask why. Maybe he feels himself that he probably shouldn't have been. But so I think. I suppose I'm in the camp whereby, for what he did before, he deserves, from me at least, an explanation as to what's gone on in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And if he gives that and I'm happy with it, then fine, we move on. Mm. But so I'd like to believe, at least at the moment, that what he's doing now is for the best interest of us. Whether or not that's too late for some, I can understand that. Mm. But I'm giving a bit of time.
Yeah. London Inner Geezer says he's come over all unnecessary at the mention of Lenny Lawrence, as I'm sure he's been a legend before my days. Right, last
me
one.
Me too, my friend.
From Lawrence Salter, he says, hi guys, love the show as always. This football club is built on a reputation of coming strong during the periods of adversity. We showed it when we left the Valley and returned, and we're showing it again now. Roland can draw out this sale as long as he pointlessly, long and pointlessly as he wishes, but he will never defeat our spirit. And that is what is winning at the moment. I believe that Carl has built such a togetherness around our team that we can succeed against any team in this league. And with our strongest players coming back, I can only see more success. If we add the players that I am reading about, I am extremely excited for the rest of the season. Yes, they're not permanent if they carry us over the line and we're, of course, taken over. Then I can see nothing but a bright and prosperous future for Charlton Athletic. I look forward to rebuying my season ticket next season with Roland gone and taking my place in the North Upper and screaming my head off once again. So thanks for that message there, Saucer, Lawrence. Right, we're going to have a quick break here, and when we come back, the last portion of the show, we'll do our player in focus, which is Joe Aribo.
Jackson, it's in! Yes! 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 Get it!
Jackson! Woo-hoo!
Charlton Live.
So welcome back to the final part of this evening's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. It's flown by this evening, so we've got a couple more minutes though to focus on Joe Aribo. He is our player in focus this week. So 21 years of age, I've said. He's scored 3 goals in the last 4 games here at the Valley. He's scored 4 all season, if you include his one earlier on in the campaign, which was against Fulham in the EFL Trophy. Which very annoyingly helped us get through to the next round, so we had to do more of that. But we're out of it now, so no need to worry. Quickly, this guy's, I mean, like, we've all been impressed with what we've seen over the last few weeks, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I said at the start of the season, if he wasn't going to get chosen, he was one of the players I thought would go out on loan straight away, because, you know, he impressed me at the end of last season, but it seemed Carl was going to go with JFC and Cashy, and I thought Joe would suffer then. And then he came in and he didn't look up to speed with everything, and then he suddenly came in and he clicked, and it's been a joy to watch, and I think he'd be one of my first names down on the sheet if I was picking.
Oh, I think he's a special player. I think every now and again we pick somebody from the ranks and they come and excite, and we had it with Ademola Lookman, and I think Joe Aribo's in that sort of I think he's in that stature, because just excites me when he gets on the ball. And I think he's going to be a very, very good player. And I think he suffered a little bit last season. I mean, it didn't help, I don't think, when Carl came out and called him. Didn't he call him the next Patrick Vieira or something?
Dele Alli was in the mix as well.
Maybe. Yeah. So I think that pressure on somebody that young, and especially in the situation we're in, is unfair. And I think we've got to bring him in as carefully as we possibly can. But he showed now, coming back in this stint, that he can cope with that. But I still think he's got a huge part to play this season. But I think when Jake Foster Cassidy's fit again, I would imagine that they'll be swapped about a bit.
Yeah. Right, so I asked you guys for your opinions on our player in focus this evening, Joe Aribo. London Innit Geezer says he's way better than Reeves. Can't believe that Robertson prefers Reeves. He was going to loan Aribo out before the injury struck. I mean, Aribo can play in that three, but he tends to be playing in the two at the bottom of the 4-2-3-1. So that's why perhaps Reeves gets in ahead of him in the other position. Elliot said he's been outstanding this season. We should drop Reeves and put Aribo behind the striker. See, like I say, he could play there. That allows Jake Foster-Cassidy to come back into central midfield, which adds another goal-scoring option. And finally, Steve Catley says he's very, very good. Would be an outrage if he gets dropped for Jake Foster-Cassidy, though. Another one like Mavadidi and Fosu, who gets the ball and immediately looks to go forward rather than sideways or backwards, and has that youthful confidence to take people on. So thanks for your messages there about Joe Aribo, and thanks for your messages throughout the show, because we've run out of time here on another patch, Charlton Live on Sunday evening here on Maritime Radio. Thank you all for joining in. Thank you to Richard Wiseman from the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust, who talked to us about yesterday's meeting with Richard Murray. Thank you to Mark Newbury for bringing in you and your quesadillas.
You're welcome.
Always a pleasure to see some quesadillas, and also yourself, of course. Grand old man Terry,
for bringing nothing in at all.
Yeah, Terry. Next time you're going to have to step your game up and bring.
Clearly, yeah.
Otherwise, your place is at risk here.
I'll bring something else.
Like
in, though,
Ben Reeves, according to a lot of fans as well. Right. So this has been Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for getting involved. We'll be back on Thursday evening with the big match preview. See you later.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.